And I ain't hear no drop in a minute. No, I'm about my business.
Rappers Got Podcast, episode 24.
24.
This is your host, Diggy Metro.
Bales Pagliacci.
And today we wanted to talk about reading contracts when it comes to beats. A lot of artists probably go on BeatStars or TrackTrain or all these different online platforms for buying beats. And every single time, it comes with a license.
Yep.
Whether you buy an MP3, Wave, and every version of the song pretty much has a different license.
Yep.
As far as how much you can actually make off the record, how much you can actually promote the record, where it could be played.
Yeah.
Can it be on an album? All these things.
Radio performances.
Because you're so excited by the record itself and the song that you just wrote, you decide to just skip past the contract completely. And that's regular practice. You are wrong for doing it, but you're not the only person doing it. Literally everyone does it.
Right now, I do the shit all the time, and I just recently started reading these licenses, and I even had to go back to like certain beats that I bought probably like 6 months to a year ago just to see the different wordage or the different percentages that the producer may get compared to the artist or what the artist may get, and like what you have to, you know, name the track. Like sometimes when you have a producer XXZ, right, you have to put somewhere within when you upload in the song to like the DistroKid to put, it says you have to put the producer's name in there because they're still a part of the song. They help write the song, whatever the case may be. So I haven't been doing that. And it's not, I haven't been doing it to be disrespectful towards them. It's just that I was so excited about a beat. I just started writing the songs and it's like the license was the last thing on my mind. And
right. One
of the biggest things we always promote is music business. So I was doing music, but the business part, I was just ignoring that.
It's important to read any contract, whether it's just a $20 beat or you're signing a major deal. Like, you have to know what these things are saying, because at the end of the day, it's going to come back to bite you in the ass if you don't actually know what's going on in the contract. So a lot of contracts within BeatStars or TrackTrain or one of these Airbit, a lot of these contracts will give the producer 50% of the royalties if the record gets to a certain point. Or 50% ownership of the record, rather, not just the royalties. Because once you pay that $20, I think that the producer is cool with you utilizing the record up until a certain amount. And then once it surpasses that amount, that's when that splits situation is going to kick in.
Because usually, like, I can't say for everybody, but usually the tier is like once you hit like 100,000 streams, like
it could be 250,000 too.
Yeah, that basic license at that point is like it gets thrown out the window. You have to buy the license above that.
Right.
So, you know.
So, an unlimited license or exclusive rights. I think on an episode a long time ago, me and you were talking, and we were talking about Mr. Famous in particular.
Yeah.
And I was saying that if Mr. Famous gets to 1 million plays, it would be in your best interest to go and purchase the exclusive rights so that you could own that record entirely. Right? Look, guys, I get it that we're in a struggle sport that a lot of people don't have the money to actually go out and purchase exclusive rights. And for a lot of you, I would say that it's not 100% necessary.
Yep.
Because your record, a lot of people's records don't get to that point. Now, we want them to get to that point, but just because we want them to doesn't mean that they're going to get there. So, like, if you go and you spend $300 on an exclusive or $800 on an exclusive and your record only makes you back $50 all time.
And it flops, yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, was it worth it at that point? Now, that's also dependent on the marketing that you put in. That's also dependent on the dollars you put in. That beat, you're only purchasing a license to use that beat. You're buying a lease, right? But like, to get it out there and to get people to listen to it, you have to do a lot of work and promotion and marketing, and that costs money. So it's like, maybe it's in your best interest to delve out the $20 for that license and put the rest into marketing rather than at least like, or going and getting the exclusive, because then you might have just shorted yourself as far as your marketing budget.
Because it's like a test drive. Like, you never know what song's going to be a hit. Like, we all know that. You just never know. You can release a song tomorrow. It may not be it. You can release a song 2 weeks from now, and that may be your hit. It may go viral. You just never know. So it's like, don't go out and spend the money on an exclusive when you just don't know what it may not work. And like you said, like, that's money that you may be losing. Now, say $800 in exclusive, just a random number, right? And you just bought it outright and the song doesn't do anything. What are you going to do? But let's just say you bought that $20 lease and you put that $780 in marketing. Now that song is going somewhere. Now you're like, you know what? Let me go buy the exclusive because now this may be my viral hit. This may be what's going to take me to the next level.
$780 in marketing will get you some following.
That should get you a nice following. Not that you're going to be like famous overnight, but you're going to get some people that's like, you know what? I'm in tune with this person's music. I want to become a fan if the music is good.
Okay, so on a lot of contracts, 50% to the producer, 50% to the artist yep. of the entire record, right? And you might say, well, and a lot of the verbiage is that the producer has songwriting credits.
Yep.
And you go, how did he write the song?
Because I put the lyrics on it. That was my argument.
And I think that if you're a young artist and you're not really in the know of the music industry, you don't know that constructing the actual beat or constructing the instrumental is writing the song.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about songwriting, like as far as like scales and keys and knowing the notes that are on the record, right? So a little mind fuck for you. If you're someone who records yourself and you go on auto-tune and you're trying to look for the key, like you're actually like searching for the key within auto-tune, you're like selecting different keys, easy way to know the key of the record, you're going to go on TuneBat.
TuneBat.com.
Or you're going to buy Mixed and Key. And all you got to do is load the record up into one of those, upload it, and it'll tell you the key of the record. Once you know the key of the record, then you know the key of your auto-tune.
Yep.
Okay. So now taking that, say the key is G minor, right? You are going to write your record in G minor because that's just how it works. You're going to fit the key of the actual record. You're going to write it in G minor. Okay. You write it in G minor. And who's responsible for you writing that in G minor?
The producer.
Who wrote the song in G minor?
The producer.
Right. So that's why they get 50% of the songwriting credits. And deservingly so.
And they even, some of the contracts even say just like off the songwriting, and they also receive 50% or whatever percentage they put on the publishing as well. So like if you go to register your songs and BMI NASCAP and, you know, you have this license, it says within the license, if you read it, hey, listen, I can get money off the songwriting credits and I can also get money off the publishing credits because I'm part of both of them. And once again, a lot of these songs may not go anywhere, but it could be that one song where it becomes viral, it becomes a hit, and you know, it launches you into that fame, or it just garners you some attention. And the next thing you know, if the producer is aware, you got some like legal paperwork coming at your house. Like, yo, take that stuff down. You ain't properly giving me my money, or I'm not getting paid. Cease and desist.
Or they could just ask for what they deserve.
Yeah.
Like, yo, I think that a lot of the time within the music industry, as like a rapper or as a singer, I think that you're going into it thinking that everyone's out to fuck you and everyone's out to just get you, right? And a lot of this shit is just normal process in business.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff is not as like nasty as you think it is. It's not as scary as you think it is. So you just have to understand that like when you are reaching out to others and outsourcing for services, there's money behind that and that has to come from somewhere. So you might think like, oh, if I pay 20 right now for this beat and then I make a million off the record, the producer just sold it for 20, fucking idiot.
That's not how that works.
No, the producer's going to get 500,000 of that record.
That's not how that works.
And if you were going into it with that mindset and that thought process, then you're in the wrong business because we're in a business that everyone gets a cut.
And it's all collaboration. Everybody's collaborating from the producer to the engineer to, we spoke about managers last time. And if you have one of those, like everybody's getting a cut of the pie. You're the one that's bringing in the pie, but everybody has to get their cut because they're assisting you along the way.
Another funny thing in contracts, right? So you find a beat that uses a sample that you love. It's a nostalgic sample. It really like attaches itself to you. Your mom used to play the record when you were young. So you just want to, or it could just be a song that you grew up listening to and you love that sample, so you want to use it. Say it's a Jay-Z song Cry sample, right? And you want to use that song and you think, well, if they come after anyone, they're going to go after the producer. He made the beat.
Ha!
Wrong. If you read the contract, a lot of producers are going to, well, I'm going to say a lot, but it's really like every producer.
Yeah, majority.
Is going to say that you're responsible for clearing the sample.
You're responsible.
They're not telling you that they're responsible. You're responsible for clearing the sample. They utilize the sample, but if you want that song to make it, you have to clear the sample. Now, what does that mean, right? Song blows up. Original artist hears it. They come after you. They sue you. They probably will get 100% of the record.
Yep. And at this time, like, as independent artists, it's not even, I don't say it's not hard, but you can literally look up how can you just clear a sample for yourself. And you may have to dish out some money if the song does blow up, but at least at that point, it's like you're doing things properly within business where it's not going to be, they're going to get 100% of everything.
Cool website for, sorry to cut you off, cool website for sampling nowadays is a website called Tracklib. And on Tracklib, they have affordable samples that you could actually clear through that website. And you could purchase them straight from there. So you know that if this record does go somewhere and it blows up, I don't have anything to worry about. And when I say affordable, I mean like $50. Like, which in sample terms is nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Is nothing. Like, you're some of these people, like the biggest records that you've ever heard that utilize samples, some of the people that came after the artist, say Drake used a sample and he didn't clear it, right? Some of the artists that are getting 100% of that record, Drake doesn't see a dime from those records.
Yep. And the money goes right to the artist.
And all right, I'm going to teach you guys something about business. You have some things in a typical storefront that are called loss leaders, right? And what a loss leader is it's an item that you don't make a profit on, but it brings people in. So when these items are there, and a perfect example, I used to work at Guitar Center, might work there again, but...
Hey.
If you walk into a Guitar Center and you see a Mac product, like an Apple Mac Mini, part of like a recording bundle, chances are Guitar Center's profit on that item is like 1%.
Small than none.
It's tiny percentage, right? But the reason why they carry a product, because you might go, well, if you're only making that much, then why even carry it? Because that brings people to the store. Once you're at the store, now it's my job as the sales associate to sell you other stuff so that you're not just getting...
And you're more enticed to buy because you're already in there.
Right. And you're already willing to spend money. I mean, you're spending that amount. What's a couple more hundred, right? So like these companies sell things called loss leaders. Now, how does that apply to what we're talking about? If you have a song on your album that has a sample that needs to be cleared and you lose every dollar from that song, but it's the best song on your album and it brings people there, and it makes people listen to the rest of the album. At what point do you make the conversation that song is your loss leader?
Because you remember the ASAP Rocky song when he did the slob on my knob and basically taking it from Juicy J?
Well, he's boys with Juicy J, so I think that they probably were able to structure something.
I actually
something.
Think that Juicy J came up and said he get paid the entire time. I think he got 100%. I probably, I might have to look this up. I believe he got either 100% of the entire record. But when you look at it, like how you pronounced it right now, what does that matter to ASAP Ferg? That song propelled them to a different level.
Right. Like,
what does it matter that he lost the money?
Because, yeah, you get 100% of that record.
Yep.
But like...
Everything else.
And you might get a portion if I perform that record.
Because
that's just how publishing works. That's how, that's how licensing works. But when I perform all the other songs, you have to divvy up what percentage of my performance was that song. Now, what percentage do you get of that song? So, yeah, you might get a small cut of everything I do with that record, but I'm getting a large cut of the rest of the music. And that's why you might want to consider if you're using samples. Now, I'm a person who I grew up on boom bap records. I love 90s hip hop and I love samples. I think that samples are the essence of hip hop personally, right? I use samples with the idea that one, I know people aren't listening to my music. Another thing that you have to consider is that when they come after you, it's not going to be at a point where you don't have money.
Yep.
It's going to be at the point where you're already blown up. Like Kendrick Lamar dropped Rigor Mortis. We might have talked about this on here, but Kendrick Lamar dropped Rigor Mortis. And the song was out for a long time. It was getting big. He didn't get sued for that record, the sample on there, until he was already on Aftermath. And why did they wait that long?
Because that's where the money's at.
Right. He had the money at that point.
Yeah.
They're not going to sue an artist. It's the same reason. I hate to bring this example up, but like Trump could have sued like Stormy Daniels for like defamation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But why would he when he's going to have to spend money on lawyers and she doesn't have anything?
Yep. What's the point?
There's zero purpose in me suing you if I can't gain anything from suing you. So bring that to music. if you're an artist who has nothing, artists know that. Like, bigger artists, they know, like, if I sue that dude, I'm going to waste money on a lawyer and nothing's going to happen. They're going to be asked to take it down. So they're going to ask you to take it down. Now, if you blow up, that's when they're going to start suing. And at that point, you have to make the argument, do I have the money now to get sued? The reason why they're suing me is because I made it, yeah. Right? So, like, did that record propel me? Like, I know Mac Miller was one of the big cases where he used the Lord Finesse beat, rapped on it, Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza, I think the record was called.
Mm-hmm.
And he got sued for $1 million. And he lost. He had to give the million. But he was Mac Miller.
At that point, you got the millies probably stashed around. And like,
you have a million to give up at that point. You know what I mean? Because you're going to make it back. So it's just one of those things where it's like, it's a double-edged sword when it comes to using samples. But that might be the reason why you even blow up. So it's one of those things you have to think about. I also personally think that it's fucking corny that like older producers would sue you off that shit. I know it's the business. I just think it's corny because that's how they made their come up.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, there wasn't copyright laws and there wasn't sample clearances the way that there is now. And a lot of those guys made their come up doing that shit. And then the next generation comes around and they're like angry that the next generation is using their sample.
Yeah, everything.
But it's like, that's what you did.
Yes, everything's like full circle. Like, everybody's just using everything because like nobody's like really coming up with too many crazy innovative ideas. Everything is just kind of really recycled.
That's how it's always been, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know I mean, like, you might have, like, artists in the 80s or 90s might have sampled fucking Beethoven. Like, you have no idea. But, like, that's just one of those things where that's how art works. You just regurgitate ideas. You try to find a way to modernize an idea that was out back then. Also, the nostalgia factor plays a huge part in hit records.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to every hit, like, there's some part from an older record that was a hit during the 70s.
Yeah.
There's something. You know what I mean? It's always like a regurgitated
and
idea.
And it pulls you to the song more and more. Like I love samples too. Like, I don't really rap too much on like sample beats, but I love a sample beat. Like, it sounds amazing. It's just like, it brings that nostalgic feel. Even when I have like when people remake like certain renditions of songs that I probably heard in like the 90s or early 2000s and they just changed the flow a little bit or a few of the keys. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's at home.
Think about like a Tory Lanez Chicks tape or one of those.
It's home.
It's just, these people already like the original record. So the chances that they'll like your new rendition are higher because they're listening to a record that they already love. So it's hard for them to not like that record knowing that they already love the record. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like when it comes to using samples, a lot of it is that. It's just that nostalgia and people are going to gravitate towards songs that they already love.
And here's another thing I was just thinking about when it comes to reading contracts, as far as, you know, working with producers as well. Even when it comes to, you know, I kind of found this out the hard way, essentially, the YouTube, but the monetization and everything, like even now, like right now, I can't personally run ads on my own videos. But since I worked with a specific producer and they're able to monetize, when I uploaded my music to YouTube, when I uploaded my song to YouTube, the beat was copyrighted, which is perfectly fine. Handle your business, get everything through. And, you know, just got to be careful with that as well, because sometimes you may get some copyright claims or some copyright strikes, especially if they use a sample and it probably wasn't clear. You might, because, you know, everybody
that's
just
gonna,
filter
a lot of
through.
The time,
yeah, it's
be
gonna
what
just,
it is.
It's going to stop you. Copyright claim. Nope, you can't use it.
And they're not wrong for doing that, but it sucks when you're an independent artist and you don't know any different. Yep. And you just spent money on the record because you didn't read the contract that says that you're responsible for clearing the sample.
But then on playing devil's advocate, the same thing kind of applies. Even if people started to come in and like the producers getting paid the money for the beat, if the beat that they enjoy and, you know, me being on the songs what they really enjoy, they may come for that specific song and the money may go to that producer right then and there. But what about the rest of the catalog that they may try to venture into now? You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean the rest of the catalog they might try to venture into?
So like, say somebody goes, the specific song is Rent Due, right?
Okay.
I can't get any money from Rent Due because it's going to go directly to the producer. Definitely fine. You made the beat. The beat is fire. It made the song. That's where the song even came from when I listened to it. But now that they're there for Rent Due, I may not be getting paid for that. But as they start going into my other videos, now I'm getting that more revenue from other places instead. That's not copyright claim. Like essentially like what we said with the loss ASAP Ferg thing. Yeah.
Loss leader.
Exactly.
It's a loss leader.
So I have one of those loss leaders. We
call them? Loss leader.
Yeah, loss leader. I have a loss leader and I'm perfectly fine with having
meaning
that loss
leader.
Meaning
it loses you money. You're spending on this. It loses you money, but it brings people in.
Exactly.
That's important. Like every business has that. You know what I mean? You might see when you go to a store, they might sell sticky notes and they don't make money off those sticky notes, but everyone comes in and buys those sticky notes and that's what they like. So now the rest of the products in the store, that's what they get money off of. That's perfectly fine. That's normal business. And you're going to continuously see that with an artist catalog. But the thing that you have to know is just that you might not make money off that record. But if you're thinking ahead, and I hope that artists out there don't think that you could only make one hit record. Like there's been in the past, there was one hit wonders that they had that one record that popped and then the rest is just gone. Like I hope going into your career that you have the mindset that if I made this one, I can make the second one and the third one. That's very important. And knowing that, like, that one record doesn't make or break you.
That's what it is.
There might be one record that hits, but it's your job at that point to keep up the momentum and to find a way to continuously grow that following and keep them there. You know, you might, I wouldn't say gas out, but like, you might use up a lot of energy on promoting that one song because you think that's the one. But now's where the hard work comes. I always tell people, like young artists that come to the studio, I always tell them, like, when you drop that first album, a lot of people drop their album and they go away for a little bit.
A while.
Like, when you drop that album, that's the time to start working.
Yep.
That album, that's, yeah, cool. You finished an album and awesome. Like, I'm happy for you, but like...
On to the next.
That album is what brought people to you. And now it's, how do I keep them? Because people will leave. Like, that's not negotiable. That's not debatable. People will leave you.
And you can even ask artists, like, even, I know it's like social media is a little bit more fickle, but you could, like, some bigger name artists, like Mark Marino probably talked about it. He's lost a lot of followers. Even I lose a lot of followers monthly. Like, I'll probably have, like, gain, like, 150, and then I'll lose 50. And it's like, I don't know what they're exactly leaving for, but I probably didn't keep their attention long enough. They're like, I'm out. I don't want to be around this guy anymore. But it's about those who do want to stick around, those who... stay true to what's going on.
But it's your job to keep them.
Exactly.
Like it's like, it's beyond just like, oh, I don't get why they don't stay. It's like, that's part of your job.
I'm trying to figure out why.
I completely understand that you can't account for everyone's reasoning behind shit. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's definitely going to be people who come and don't stay. Maybe they came on a mistake. Maybe they followed you and they didn't.
On a whim, because I do that shit all the time.
Right. And then you start to see posts and you go, I actually don't fuck with this that much. That happens.
Yeah, I do that shit all the time.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I really don't like this that much. I thought I liked it, and I don't. Maybe I only like that one. But that's where your job as an artist comes in. Like, how do I keep you here? Like, what do I have to do to keep you? Maybe it's showing more of your personality. There's a bunch of things that you could do as an artist that are going to keep people around, but that's your job. Your job is to keep people around. And if you want a label deal, they're going to make sure that you're one of those people that can keep people around.
Yep, because that's what's most important.
And now that we're here on labels, being with a label, a lot of people give it a lot of slack. They hate on being signed to a label, but what better way to get samples cleared than signing with a label?
Exactly.
that might have part in the original song's creation?
Who got in-home producers and they already getting paid the rate that they probably not going to, you know, get the percentage wise.
But beyond that, what? All right, so you sign a deal to Universal and say Universal has, they do, but say they have Drake on the label and you want to sample a Drake song. You're on Universal.
Easy money.
The chances, I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy process, but the chances that you're going to get that sample cleared are higher. Especially if you're an act that they...
on the same label.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's one of the benefits of signing to a label or having good management or good lawyers is that when you have people with connections, they know who to reach out to. Because as an independent artist, you're sitting at home, they sample a Michael Jackson record, you're probably sitting there going, all right, but like, how the fuck do I reach out to Michael Jackson?
How do I get to that point? Yep.
Well, having a good lawyer who knows people in the business, you have a better opportunity to actually reach out to that estate. Like, if you don't know anyone and you're sitting at home trying to do these things, yeah, it's probably impossible for you. It's probably very unlikely that you're going to get the attention of someone unless your song starts to explode.
Yep.
But that's why it's important to know who you're dealing with and to get the right people on board in your career who can give you access to these different people and do know how to clear samples. And again, back to the track lip thing, utilize that website, man. Like, there, it's, if there's easy ways to sample, use them.
Use them. Use every resource that's out there for
you. Use the easy ways to do things before you go the hard route. You know, and I get that maybe the samples on TrackLib aren't going to be the most well-known songs in the world, and they're not going to, maybe they aren't the ones that get you a hit. But like, people have gotten big on sampling records that are mad unique and have never been heard before. And it works the same way. You know what I mean? So like, in this business, you got to navigate in a way that you're not necessarily always going to be the one getting fucked. And when you bringing it back to working on BeatStars beats or TrackTrain beats, reading that contract is a very important part in not getting fucked.
Because if you're not reading it, you could personally feel like you're being attacked, or people are, or like the producers are personally out to get you, when it's not necessarily the case. You know, they need their due just as much as we need our due.
Well, one thing that we'll never do here is treat the producer like they're not the artist as well.
Exactly.
Like, a lot of artists probably read the contract and they go, oh, what the fuck? He's trying to rob me, or he's trying to take from me, blah, blah, blah. It's like, fam, his input on that record might be more of a reason that you got big off of it than you were. You know what I'm saying?
Because a lot of times, even if you like the biggest hits or whatever, the biggest hits that's out there, right? A lot of times people, the first thing they say, yeah, that beat is fire. And then they'll probably say, like, the rapper did his thing. But for the most part, people usually tune into the beat. I know even, like, for the older generation, like, when my mom listened to music, you know, she'll listen to Pop Smoke. You know what he's talking about? You know what he's saying? No. But I love that beat. And it's like, at that point, she don't even care. The beat is what's, like, the artistry of the beat is what's, like, taking her in. And then once you're there and you're putting your lyrics on top of it, it creates that whole masterpiece. So they're definitely part of that whole equation.
They're a big part. And to just discredit them and act like they had no part in the success of that record, because once you bought the beat, you had to do all the rest of the work, doesn't matter. Everyone plays a part in a record, whether it be the engineer, the artist on the record, the producer on the record, who is another artist on the record,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, every single person on that record has an equal part, and maybe not equal. I would say the artist that's performing on the record and the producer who made the instrumental
mm-hmm.
are... they're the highest ones. Engineer is very close because they made the record sound the way they did.
Yep.
Right. But you can't take out any part of that and be like, I rapped on it or I sung on this record, so like I'm the staple. I'm the important part. Wrong. Because what made you go for that record?
It was the beat itself.
Right. Why did you go for that beat? You didn't just come up with the song and then find the beat after. You constructed your whole record based on that beat. So knowing that the producer holds an important part of that record, and the fact that you paid $20 and they allowed you to get 250,000 streams, that's important.
Those are some great numbers right there. I ain't gonna lie to you.
That's not bad, because after 250,000 streams, you made some of that money back.
You already probably made that $20.
You made $1,000 on Spotify.
Yeah, you made $20 back.
You made $1,000. So like, yeah, you got the 20 back, and now a smart producer probably factored in, well, they need 800 to pay for the exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So let them get that 1,000, right?
You got to come back to me now.
And now, once you have that 1,000, come back, buy the exclusive. Come you have it. The money. So they're allowing you time. It's like in business, you got net 30, net 60. And that's basically when you buy product. I've worked in music retail for a long time. So like, if you buy product, say I buy Pioneer DJ mixers, right? I might have good standing with the company, and they might allow me net 60 terms, which means that I can purchase the items, get them, and then pay them after 2 months. What Pioneer is doing when they allow that is giving you the time to sell the product, mm-hmm. make your profit, and now have the money to pay the product off.
Yep.
You know, and the same shit applies to music. And that's why producers probably construct a contract like that, because they understand, like, yeah, man, we don't have the money. So like, allow them to spend the 20, use the song, blow the song up. And then at that point, you have enough money to come back and buy the exclusives or buy the unlimited.
And as an artist, if like, you know, hearing this or like not reading the contracts or just seeing these things put in a contract, if, you know, you have a problem with it, there's a simple way you can bypass it. Start producing your own beats.
Yeah. And if you start producing your own beats, are you going to start using samples?
Probably I wouldn't. Unless you got the stuff like Splice and stuff where they give you the samples and everything.
It's royalty free.
Yeah, exactly. So that's
if you could find royalty free anything, royalty free drum kits, royalty free. What royalty free means is that you don't owe any money once you use them. So the producers that are on Splice, I'm not sure what their cut is from being an actual creator on there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they get money from.
They gotta
it.
Have a contract somewhere.
There's no way that they're just uploading stuff and for not free. Making any money.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they get a payout, probably based on the amount of downloads they get. But it's important to utilize the royalty-free ones. A lot of the sampling that I do when I make a beat is royalty-free. Did you, is...
Oh, no, it's dead.
Phone's dead?
No, it's disconnected.
Good?
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, so... using royalty-free samples, using royalty-free drums, if you could produce your own stuff, like, there's a limit to that as well, because at some point, your own production is going to become dry, which is why you see someone like Russ, who produced all his first albums and then started working he started working with Scott Storch and all these big guys, because your production is going to get you to a certain place. People then want to hear you on different production. Same mm-hmm. with J. Cole. Yep. Like, J. Cole albums sound great. And then when you start to hear him work with like T-Minus and Boy Wonder and all these people, it's a completely different life, because you're like, oh shit, like now he sounds different, or he sounds the same, but like he has more energy on these different records because it's not him doing all the work.
Yep. And that's something like a lot of artists, you know, just try to do that as well. Like if you could write a song, you probably could make a beat. I'm not saying, I don't want to take anything from producers, like, you know, it's not like an actual skill, but you wouldn't know until you try something. And if you can't do it, you can't do it, but why not
try? I also think it's this. I think that anything, if you're a creative person, anything that you put your mind to and put the work into, you'll become good at.
Yep.
So like the same way that you might have gotten good at rapping, all that made you good is that you put a lot of time into it. So if you turn that time around and you put that time into production, you'll probably get really good at production as well. It's just one of those things where you have to dedicate just as much time. I think that people think you could give 20% here and 15% there and 50% here and get the same results on all of the things that you're delving out this percentage to of effort and time. But realistically, if you want to get great at something, you have to put 100% into it. So like maybe if you already got yourself to a point where you're comfortable with writing or performing on a record, now let me take some time and put it into my production. So take a little hiatus and get your beats right. And once you get your beats right, now you can start rapping and producing all your own stuff and claim ownership.
Because at that point, all the revenue coming straight towards you.
And that's important. That's important in music in general. Like having revenue come to you and not having to, it goes back to the last episode we did about management. Like, yeah, it's important to have roles and team players and stuff like that. But it's also just as important to retain as much ownership as possible. And like you're starting to see a lot of artists selling their catalogs and stuff. Yep. And maybe they're selling them because right now is probably the time where people are willing to buy them.
Yeah, money.
Right? And they figure after projections, like, you'll never make this much money off this album the music anyway. Ever again.
So you
like,
might just take the whole big lump sum and go run with it.
Right. And reinvest it or, mm-hmm. or do something. You know what I mean? But like, just know that you want as much ownership and as much retention of revenue as you can possibly get. So like, if producing your own records, if rapping on your own records, if mixing your own records, if that's something that you are capable of doing, then you should do it as much as possible. I'll tell you right now, for me, I got very good at writing and rapping on records. I produced a long time ago. I was okay at production, but then I lost a job. I had to start the studio up. Excuse me. And in starting the studio up, I dedicated all my time to engineering and mixing and mastering and figuring out mm-hmm. how to get great at those things. And it took all my time. And now I'm comfortable with that. So my next thing is production.
Yep.
I just started. I used to try to make beats. And now I'm at a point where it's like, let me try to jump back into there. Because I probably got, if we're being realistic, I probably got to about 25-30%
mm-hmm.
of where I needed to be to produce. I'm trying to get that to 50%, then 75%. And, mm-hmm. you know, and if I can get everything to be 100, that's beautiful. But if I could do 75%, because in my head, I'm at 100% with rap.
Yeah, Pen Game is sharp.
I'm good with that. Like, I'm not saying I'm the greatest rapper that ever lived. I'm just saying that I'm at a point where I'm comfortable writing my own songs, and I know that I could garner my following with the way I write and the way I rap songs. Now, I want to get my beats to the same place, and what that requires is me going back into learning mode and tutorial mode and figuring out how to really construct a beat, because it's a whole different art in itself. And that's why I put a lot of emphasis on producers getting what they're owed.
Yep.
Because just as much as you worked your ass off to be a rapper, these producers worked their ass off to be producers. You know what I'm saying? So it's very important to note that this is not just a one-way street, and it's not, you're not the star. Everyone involved is part of the equation. And if the star is broken up into five pieces, then you're just one of those pieces.
Exactly. Everything has to come together cohesively and for it to work well. And like, even for me, you know, I wanted to start producing, but I've just got, once again, I just got to that point where it's like, all right, the music is there, the sound is there. Now I could probably try to dibble dabble in some beats, dibble dabble in video production, whatever the case may be. Because at the end of the day, any type of source of stream of income in this creative space, I want to be a part of it, especially if I feel like I have a passion for it. I've always loved videos. I've always loved to shoot videos. I always loved to watch videos. I grew up, every day I was watching MTV Jams on like 142. I just every day just watching. It's like that was something that kind of got captivated in my brain, and it's something that I still hold true to my music now. So, you know, any time or any place that I can fit my video, what is it? Videographer?
Videographer.
Because I always say it, the fucking videographer. But the video...
Videographer.
I can't
videographer.
Say, videographer. There we go. I can never pronounce that shit. But, you know, I definitely wanted to put my ring in that hat again. My hat in that ring again. Because it's just like, it's just something that it was always a passion to me, but had to get the music down pat.
I also want to preface this, and we can end this episode, but I also just want to preface, if you're going to start making your own beats, don't expect to be good when you first start.
Yeah,
just like you were bad at rapping when you first started, because a lot of people want to cap and act like they were the greatest rapper from the time they were born. But like, it takes time to get good at rapping. Same shit applies to production. So if you try throwing your hat in the ring with production and you're not good at it, don't be soft and give up.
Quit, keep trying.
That's not how anything works. Like, you're not going to ever get good if you just give up, and you wouldn't have gotten good at rapping if you just gave up. So like, go in with the same mindset. If I want to be a good producer, it takes time. My first beats are going to suck. And after that, I'm going to start getting better and better. You know what I mean? But it takes that time. You're probably not going to know how to mix the beat at first. There's going to be a lot of things that, and the beat might sound like shit. But if you put that time and effort in, and you consistently go back to it, and you're working on it, and you're watching tutorials, and you're doing all these things, then you will get better. Your production will be worthwhile. And fuck it, man. It's more revenue for you.
Yeah.
It's a bigger revenue stream. You know what I mean? Adding new revenue streams. As far as your rap catalog, and now you have a beat catalog, and maybe you start selling beats, and then you, my friend, can ask for that 50% ownership because you wrote half the song.
Just because rap isn't just always it. You can still be a rap artist, you can still be an artist, but it doesn't have to be your one and only job. Because once again, if you are a creative person, you want to create regardless of what it is. You want to have your hand and mixed in and involved with almost anything. And
maybe you find out that you weren't the rapper that you thought you were, and you're the producer that you should have been.
Boom.
You feel what I'm saying?
Reverse Kanye. Yeah, reverse Kanye. Definitely reverse Kanye.
You got anything else to say?
No, that's it.
All right, cool, guys. This is Diggy Metro, Rapper's Guide Podcast, episode 24. We are signing out.
All right, we out. Bills Pagliacci.
Peace out, guys.